Previously on Quest Laid Plans.
You see Porla standing at a bulletin board. Come on in, kid. I've been expecting you.
Did you know that worm was going to come?
I mean, since when have we all told each other everything? Porla, you're not the only one who lost someone. Kit is right. It's not easy to lose someone and you never get over it and it hurts forever, all right? But we all have to go on living. And Porla very calmly looks at Brax and says, maybe not all of us, Brax. As she serenely watches Brax go limp on the couch as dark lesions open up all over his body until they are just covered with wounds.
Porla, what the fuck is that? What the hell are you doing?
I know how it looks, but please don't panic. I promise he'll be back in just a minute. And you see her kind of looking intently at him and chanting under her breath, and you see this like shimmering in the air sort of rising from Brex. And then it just turns into what looks like a window. As the window expands, you're no longer in Kyrelius's office. You're outside. You see rising from what is normally an empty place on the grounds, six stone pillars shaking and rumbling and rising from the ground slowly.
Get in here. It's bad. Brex, she got Brex.
What do you mean she got Brex?
If you let me take care of this, Brex will come back and everything will be fine, okay? But I need to keep him with me.
Is this where you give us, like, your big villain speech? Because this is honestly kind of pathetic as far as villain speeches go.
You think I'm a villain?
I think you're standing there holding the possibly dead body of our friend. So yeah, that looks pretty fucking villainous.
Welcome to Quest Laid Plans, the podcast that asks the question, can an old party learn new tricks? I'm your Dungeon Master, Megan Kelleher, and with me are five troubled but ultimately good-hearted teens who, despite being from completely different high school cliques, bond one day while stuck in detention in the 1980s.
Hi, I'm Maya S. Ming, and my favorite type of breakfast is sausage and scrambled eggs. That's what the movie's about, right?
I'm Phil Arevalo, playing Kit Marpala, Water Genasi Monk, and definitely a color guard kid who got detention for fucking up a rifle throw and breaking a window.
Wow.
Wild.
Hello, I'm Jesse B. Kohler, playing a human boy, golden boy, just wants to make his dad proud boy, Esther Miphians, sorcerer.
Oh. Oof. I'm Jamie Hathaway, playing Aveline Yavri Skywatcher, and I only watched The Breakfast Club after Pitch Perfect.
Wow, that is upsetting to me.
I am like a major a cappella nerd, and even I'm a little upset by that.
This is upsetting to me, Neda Marie Votiva, playing your halfling wizard rogue, Naraya. I am currently doing the lipstick trick with the titties as we speak.
Can confirm. Yeah.
There it is. Oh, wow, they're doing it. It's amazing.
Oh, it's happening right now.
Wow, such a precise application.
Wow.
Everyone who can't see Netta's boobs right now is missing out.
Yeah, and my mom listens to the show. Anyway,
subscribe to our Patreon.
And I'm Megan, a mean principal who's worried about a loose screw in a door.
She's gone, Porla.
You know, I've never really understood why everybody keeps saying that. It's like,
because it's true.
It's true if you believe it's true, but what if you don't believe it's true?
Oh no.
I mean, that's delusional. And it stops you from...
It stops you from seeing what you have right in front of you.
Yeah.
Megan, can Winsuit make some kind of history check about the creation of this world? Like, what does she know about the origin of this world?
Sure.
Listen.
In a moment of crisis, I like to think about history.
That's a 19.
What specifically would you like to know?
The theory that the gods remade the world according to what they believed in.
So I guess to recap what you all know, the creation myth is the world ended and the Pention, the five gods, saw that humanity had a really strong tradition of, you know, fantasy and folklore, and at their best they were capable of imagining stories that were full of heroism and good, and so they decided to bring them back in a world where that was real for them, to see if they could achieve their highest potential that way.
And what would it take? What kind of power would it take? For would she have any idea from her own, maybe her own conferences with Aspiration, the god, what kind of energy it took to basically remake reality according to these stories? Like, is there anything that she would know about, or anything like whispers, theories, myths about that?
All you would know is that you would have to be a god.
Okay. It just strikes at something in her when Porla says something about what you believe to be true. And it takes her a second to just kind of process that. And I think she says, Porla, if you're talking... Only our gods can change reality according to what they believe in.
That's where you're wrong, Windswip. Not just our gods, any gods. I can see the wheels turning. You always did love to know how things work, don't you? I think you'll find this really fascinating. One thing that I learned when I was in, you know, university studying is sort of the structure scientifically of everything and how it's all put together. It's not some kind of crazy delusional theory. It's materially where we live. We live on a plane. We live on the material plane, but there's also the ethereal plane and the astral plane where the gods live. And they're all connected, and it just takes the power of a god to open those gates.
So you're trying to harness the power of gods to open the gates.
To bring a soul back from the astral plane. Something that no one has ever done, or should do, because it is...
Something that's not done because it's insane.
But of course it's done. How do you think we're all here? Gods opened those gates and brought people back. It's happened so many times. And as for whether I'm harnessing the power of a god, it's sort of a two-way street. She's sort of harnessing the power of me as well.
Who? What? Who?
Which have you done?
Her name is Quaris.
Oh, no.
I, like, turn and give Esther, like, a, there you go.
Porla, this could remake... I don't even know. This could remake the whole world, and not in a good way. I mean, if you bring back one soul from beyond, where does it end? What other souls might come through those gates if death no longer keeps them in?
Well, nobody comes through unless... Here, it's complicated. Give me a second. And... She looks back to the temple, and you can see that enough of it has risen now that there's like a base to it, like a floor. And rising from the floor is this podium with a bowl on it. It's like this golden bowl. And you see her look back to it. And here's how this is gonna go.
Oh God!
Cool. I was not ready. I don't
last
know why
word
I
said
ready,
before
I
disaster.
I need to go and walk around. I'm like genuinely angry, me Jamie.
Tell me how this is going to work.
Going to kill this bitch.
Here's how this is gonna work.
Thanks for the really, really long pause of silence after I said that, guys.
For those of you at home, the party is fucking hysterical right now.
We are irate.
I think they can tell.
Okay, guys. I have a number. That number is
we're going to treat it like a DC, even though it is actually way, 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 way too high to be a normal D&D DC. The way we're going to do this is we are going to roll initiative, and we are going to take turns trying to reason with Porla or whatever. It doesn't have to be a persuasion. It could be, it's up to you. But
can it be me persuading her with my fist to her face?
Rather than, no, it's going to be, you have essentially a limited time. You don't know how limited, but you have a limited time to make your case and do what you need to do to get her to stop walking towards this bowl. And you are going to take turns doing so. It's not like traditional combat where you have like an action and a bonus action and a movement or whatever. You just have one thing you do. So everybody roll initiative.
Fuck me.
14.
11.
10.
Oh, also 11.
8.
We suck at these.
Does Brex get to roll or are they dead?
No, they are dead.
Brutal.
Cool. Cool.
Good times. Okay, so who got the highest one?
I got a 14. I think it's me.
Yeah.
So first in this initiative order of sorts is Porla.
Fuck.
She says, look, I know we haven't had a lot of time to catch up over the years, but I've been studying necromancy, and before you say anything, it's a beautiful school of magic. Not a lot of people know this. It's very, very logical, and it's flexible in a way that no other school of magic is, which is good because you all keep fucking my shit. I originally was going to be able to perform this spell with only a consecrated relic consisting of objects that Chiron had once had. The statue with her armor, and the soul of a blood relative. But of course, Cabriel had to be fucking idiot and cry. Now he's getting upset about it. So that didn't quite work out. But there's also the option of blood. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to get as many sources of blood as I needed. So, well, then I had to go straight towards souls, but, well, I guess that's on me for underestimating your ability to take on my my bird friends. So, unfortunately, it did have to come to this with, you know, she gestures down to Brex. But look, the ritual we're creating is beautiful. It's called the Aura of Life. And I'm going to be the vessel. Nothing within 30 feet of me is going to be able to die ever again. I can bring back anything, and it just has to stay with me, and it can't die. Brex will come back, Chiron will come back, we'll all be together.
This is very interesting to Aveline, because I have the Aura of Life spell as a druid, and that's not how that works, Porla. That's just not...
There's already a spell called Aura of Life. That's what you're telling me?
There's already
so
a spell
I made that
Aura
name up, and I guess if it's already called Aura of Life, then I'm going to call mine Super Aura of Life because it's better.
Cool.
So Super Aura of Life.
Wow.
Well, you know, I mean, this is how these things happen, right? This, you know, the sausage gets made. Apologies to your Aura of Life. I didn't mean to step on any toes.
Just watching Jamie try to contemplate how they can possibly reach through the screen and strangle a fictional character on their own.
I'm gonna cast Aura of Death on your face, you bitch.
It is your turn, Adam.
My turn where I'm supposed to be persuading her not to do this?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's up to you. You don't have to persuade her. You could stop her. But essentially, she's making her way towards this bowl in this, like, I guess it's like a marble. It's a temple, but it's kind of, like, open-sided. She's, you know, sort of said, like, all I have to do is just go over there and complete the ritual, and it's gonna be fine. You have, on your turn, a chance to tell me what you want to do to attempt to stop her.
I don't know.
I think unless you can make a very good case to me as to why it would be anything else, I'm going to ask that it is some sort of ability check. I would allow guidance. I'm not going to be allowing the help action on these checks because you're all sort of doing it together. So it's like kind of goes without saying.
Can I make a religion check to try and connect with admonition? Because this is really feeling like what should never be. This feels like...
I love that. Yeah, do it.
This is like, who the fuck is Paula to be making the decisions that the gods made? Who is she to be commanding life and death? This is not something that we should have control over. This is literally like, I grew up knowing that this was something that should not happen and should not be allowed to happen. And I think in this rage and fear and just furious grief as well, like, Aveline has spent so much time in the last 10 years like processing Chiron's death and letting go of this person that she loved, and to see this other person who she used to consider a friend going against the natural order of things and her own deeply held religious beliefs to do something so selfish is just, it's like I have to reach out to my god at this point because I don't know what else to do, and I'm going to use my point of inspiration to give myself advantage.
Nice.
Fuck yeah, I love that.
Nat 20.
Yeah.
Nat 20.
God is real.
The other one's a 5.
Holy shit.
That is a nat 20. So I don't know what that happens.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I don't have a job anymore because Jamie's the DM.
Yeah, no.
We love you. It's just Porla who's terrible.
So yeah, that's actually a 24 with the plus to my religion check.
Okay. Jamie, what does it feel like when Aveline prays and communicates with admonition when you get your communications from your dreams? Because I know we haven't talked about it a lot, but you're sort of like a reflavored Kalashtar. So you do have these sort of prophetic images. Like, what does that feel like or look like? Like, what is the sensory experience of that for you?
I think it's probably changed quite a lot over the last decade as Aveline has had this kind of a variety of experiences of losing and then refinding faith. But I think it's, you know, when you close your eyes really, really tight and you kind of see colors a little bit?
Yeah.
I think it's like that, but the colors turn into fire and then the fire turns into shapes, and that's how the kind of visions come through. So I think it's a kind of like tight, kind of clenched sort of burning. But it doesn't necessarily look like much from the outside because it's all this kind of mental stuff. But it doesn't look... I don't think it looks particularly relaxed or peaceful when she prays. Especially not in this situation.
Right, I think what people would probably see from the outside would be you screwing up your face and also probably gritting your teeth really hard like you do when you want to scream or punch someone and you can't.
And like fists balled up and like a little bit of smoke coming from somewhere.
From her ears
and like her fists,
nails digging into palms, smoke coming out instead of blood.
Sick. Yeah.
You see these colors behind your eyes in the colors of fire morph into the shape of a horse head with two horns, and you see admonition so clearly in a way that you very rarely have in your life. You can't remember the last time you saw admonition this clearly. And then you hear a voice, and it says,
"My child, you know what you must do. This is your time when I need you. This must not be."
That's all you hear. And then all of a sudden the fire goes out behind your eyes, and you feel as though you are kicked in the chest by a horse.
Wow, beautiful.
My God.
A blessing. It is a visceral, physical jolt. And you find yourself a little bit shaky, but so clear, mentally, physically clear, strong, powerful, in a way that you know that you have your God on your side within you, empowering you to stop that which must not be. And you see Porla see this, and you see her bristle a little bit. And then she clenches her fists, and you see this strange aura coming from her necklace, which the last time you looked at it was during the Remoraz Wraith battle, and you recognized it as her sort of like reliquary of a feather that was supposedly like from Axiom. And you see this feather
And being possessed, I mean, not possessed, like being like, you know,
filled with the spirit of.
Yeah, filled with the spirit of your god. You look at this relic and you realize this is not a godly holy relic. And this is not a feather of Axiom. It's not even the feather of an owl. It's a feather like you've never seen. You don't know what it is, but it's radiating this very strange, very like sickly yellow light that is now shrouding Porla as she starts sort of shaking herself. Hey, Questies, it's me, Megan, back from our unplanned, unintentional hiatus, and we want to thank you so, so much for bearing with us and for your patience during that time. We had a bunch of just totally unexpected, horrible tech issues. But this is what happens when you have a really small team of basically just two people editing on our own personal MacBooks. And if you want to actually hear more about how the show is edited, I would direct you towards our Patreon, because this month, our bonus episode is a very special, like, roundtable Q&A that we did with the cast. We talked about not only sort of how the sausage is made in the editing process, but also, like, character ideas and what surprised us, and looking back on the first half of season one. It was the first time we were all in the same Zoom together since we wrapped season one. So that was really, really fun. And yeah, check us out, patreon.com/questplayedplans, which is incidentally also a fantastic way to support us monetarily if you feel sorry for us that tech issues cost money to fix. If not, a great free way to help us is to leave us 5 stars and a fantastic review on the podcast listening platform of your choice, and or tell your friends, go on Twitter, tell your RP groups, follow us on social media. All of our social media handles are in the show notes always. And yeah, thank you so much again for your patience, and we are just so thrilled to be back. Also, finally, if you want to hang out with the cast and crew and other Questies, check out bit.ly/questlaydiscord or questlaydplans.com/discord, because we have a Discord where we've been staying active even in our sort of unintentional break and chatting about all manner of things, you know, theories about what's going to happen in the future, completely unrelated stuff. It's a cool little community we're forming, and we'd love you to be in it. So check us out. Without further ado, back to the show. And it is now Nariah's turn.
Are we allowed to cast magic? Not at her, just during this.
Like, it just depends on what you want to do.
All right, tell me how far away she is, if we're assuming that we're walking and she's walking.
She's not that, I don't know, like 10, 15 feet? She's making her way towards this temple, not like running, but just like walking with purpose very slowly and kind of dramatically.
I would like to misty step next to her.
Sure.
If you'd let me.
Yeah.
I would also like to just prestidigitate just a glow around myself, like I'm backlit. Then I would just like to talk to her.
Sure. Is the goal... I'm going to have you make the roll first before you talk to her.
Cool.
And I want to know what you want to roll. Are you trying to roll intimidation, I'm assuming? Or?
I was going to let you hear me out and see if it's intimidation or persuasion.
I think what I want to do is have you decide ahead of time what
it's
you want to do.
It's intimidation.
Okay. So roll intimidation for me.
18.
Oh?
18?
Yes.
All right. Tell me how you intimidate.
I misty step next to her. There is a backlit glow around me. I just start keeping pace with her, looking up to make direct eye contact. And I say, I'm not going to debate the merits of getting a formal education in magic with you.
Year two. You got temperance.
Oh.
Which we know is a major arcana.
Yes.
So this is a big one. Your character completely rethinks their perspective on healthy habits. What caused the change? Did this help your character out of a difficult pattern, or were they okay before and now are becoming, like, too rigid and obsessive?
I think it's the latter, unfortunately. I think I took way too sharp of a swing in the
new direction and, you know, deciding that I'm gonna refocus a little bit and, like, rethink some things. I think I did the, like, manic academic thing for a little bit where it would be, like, 20-hour days and just a shit ton of, like, matcha or coffee or whatever we have and just, like, I need to catch up to technically and, like, emotionally the level of whatever allies and friends I still have living. So I will be doing, like, an intensive.
So it's, like, self-improvement, but, like,
bad.
But what if too much?
Yeah. Yes.
What if self-improvement, but too much? Awesome.
I think I tried to do, like, a 4-year BA, but in, like, 2 years. Like, I was like, I will learn everything, and I will know it yesterday.
So it's in Major Arcana, so at this point you are going to take one of your adjectives and get rid of it and replace it with a new one that sort of reflects more what's going on now.
Cool.
One of the, like, boiled down adjectives of my, like, edgelord situation was naive, by which I mean, like, seeing things in very, like, teenager black and white, like, this is right and this is wrong and there is no other way to do it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think I'm changing that to, like, God, there is a word for that. Like, open-minded? No.
I mean, we can just say nuanced worldview if that's,
yeah,
like...
I'll say that and then I can, like, look up synonyms in my own free time.
Yeah, or we could say, like, black and white to gray or something.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of that, like, growing up to realize that you were not always right at 14.
Because we've both learned some things, and I'm not here to argue the pros and cons of necromancy, because I think that some of the things you're doing could be exceptionally valid and useful and good. But this is not it. Your grief has made you so cruel, and it's making you forget everyone else. You just listed so many people you wanted to hurt for some weird, fucked up endgame. Poor La Chiron would not even recognize you. If you bring her back, she would not see an ounce of who she knew. You've become pathetic in a way that you never were. You know better than this.
She tears up a little bit.
I just continue staring her down, and I will keep walking in pace with her.
Cool. When's what?
Ooh. Man, how do you follow that up? So, first of all, props to Netta and Araya for going there. I would like, if you would let me, Windswept to use one of her. So she gets 3 of her giant smites per day, and I would like if you would permit me to use one of those so that she can catch up to them, to where Porla and Raya are, and stand between her and the temple as big Windswept.
Door.
Okay, so she's going to do that. She's going to just push herself. It's kind of like a, like, she's stretching this time. It's a little bit of an effort, it seems, just because she's a little hurt from that morning's battle. But she stretches up into her full height and just takes these big stomps over, puts herself physically between Porla and the temple, and says,
Porla, I'm so sorry that it had to come to this. If you take one more step, I'm going to grapple you to the ground. We can't do this. We don't know what else you let into this world. And I know it must feel like you already live in the worst possible hell, but it's not that way.
Okay, so we're gonna now start, we'll say year one starts like the day after the final battle. So yeah, draw me a tarot card and tell me what you got.
8 of Wands.
Okay, I am going to make an executive narrative decision here, which our listeners may like roast me for on Reddit or whatever, but I think it makes most sense. And I won't ever know because I don't fucking read that shit. So the Eight of Wands vanilla text that I have says, your character receives a letter from one of the other party members that changes everything. What is it? And I will let you know that one of the other party members also got this card on their first turn. Mm. And it was a letter from Porla. And it would make sense to me that maybe she sent you one too, but I would also accept, like, it could be anybody. So it's totally, like, I just wanted to let you know that in case that was, like, interesting for you.
I mean, depending on the nature of the letter, do you think... Well, okay, so
it was like a, it was like a, basically like a supportive, like, you didn't do as bad as you think you did and I appreciate you kind of letter.
I mean, having established how badly that Winsip actually did, that is very sweet. No, that would be, that would, like, I think that would fit. I think Winsip is very much, like, the sort of dichotomy of wanting to be the therapist friend, but has herself a lot of, you know, doubts and self-criticisms and whatnot. And so I think, you know, this would mean a lot to her to receive that letter. Probably send her into a spiral of some kind, though.
I guess, so the other person who received one was Kit, and Kit did a lot in the final battle, but just felt really shitty about it. I'm telling you this because I think that Porla would maybe say, like, I also sent a letter to Kit, because, like, he was really down on himself. So you would know that, and yeah, it was just very much like a, you know, you are an important member of this party, and here's all the things I admire about you, and just, like, a really nice, like, supportive, like, pick-me-up letter, the kind that you, like, keep forever and reread and whatever.
Yeah, I think that's very sweet. I also think that, since this, we're talking year one, like, literally right after the battle, I also think that it's highly possible that Winsip does not, like, accept this. Like, she does, like physically accept it, and she wants to emotionally accept it, but I think she has, she kind of files that away under, like, how Porla has also lost a lot, lost as much as any of us, and it is in Porla's nature to be healing and supportive and sweet and all that, that she's just being nice. It's sort of still, like...
I love it. So I love it. I think that's, like, totally true to character.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she would still keep the letter, and she would do as you say, like, revisit it and try to believe in the words, you know, that that are being written, but it just is not quite, the self-confidence doesn't quite follow, as it were.
Yeah. So the text of this says the letter changes everything. So what does the letter change for you?
I'm trying not to do a, like, confirmation bias thing here, but I do think it, I was considering that Winsip, despite trying to make a lot of close connections in the party, would go home or leave and be kind of isolated. So maybe it was that initially she was thinking, oh, I should stay and be here for everyone because we're all suffering, we're all grieving, we need to stay together and get through this together. But maybe after that letter, she kind of reconsiders and, you know, kind of has a, like, a cry about it, as like, oh God, it's not true, it's not true. Like, and maybe goes off on her own for her own, gets to have her own, like, space. And wherever she goes, whether it's back home or just kind of wandering for a bit, it's more of a, she's there for longer than she ever meant to be. So she's apart from her friends for longer than she ever intended.
Cool. So it had kind of the opposite effect, where it was like, I'm not ready to have anyone be nice to me right now.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, oh God, like, I can't face the truth of my failure. You know, I can't actually be there for them because I suck. And I'm not fulfilling my role as a therapist friend. I'm doing a bad job. I couldn't protect anybody. I couldn't, you know, do it. And I just need to think about and reflect. And they're better off, you know, without me anyway. So that kind of very, like, self-indulgent, like, you know, grieving kind of thing.
And it could be so much worse. Brex might not come back. Chiron might not even come back in the way that you know her. And who knows how many other people would suffer and sacrifice. We, Chiron, sacrificed herself to save the world, and now you want to screw it up. So I will stop you physically if I have to.
Are you making a check, or is...
I could. She doesn't have great, but she could try to go persuasion, intimidation. They're the same modifier, but I guess in this case it's a little more intimidate because she's threatening to physically stop her. So we'll see what we get. Not the worst I could have rolled. 15.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Natural 16 to 15.
She sees the two of you getting emotional, and she looks up at you, Windswip, and is just like, I don't think I can stop it anymore. And you see from her reliquary, this sickly yellow light blasts out and emerges in the form of, first it's like a blob, and then you see a pair of wings, and you just see it kind of morph into what looks like a little yellow pigeon. It's kind of just a gross looking regular bird, and it
knew that pigeons were harbingers of the apocalypse.
Yeah, they just want that bread. And it lands on her shoulder, and it takes reaches up with one of its wings, and it wipes her tears. And you see it whisper into her ear, and you can hear it, and it says, "Don't let them stop you, Porla. You know what you have to do."
You're seriously gonna listen to the gross pigeon?
Kit,
it's not my turn.
Oh, God. So I assume that I have also been walking, you know, at a distance this whole time. We've been sort of keeping the group together. Is that fair to assume? Okay, two questions. How far away is the temple?
I will say you've probably gotten, like, 50 feet closer. It's still quite far away.
And that's where, like, the bowl is?
Yeah, it's still, like, rumbling and emerging and shaking the ground. It's just like, a really slow thing. I guess what I said before was that you saw, like, a base emerge, and I think you would have seen the bowl emerge, like, and then the pedestal that it's on, and then, like, now you're starting to see a base emerge.
Okay, so that's still, like, hella far away. And is the bird still on Porla's shoulder?
Yes.
Here's what Kit's going to do. Kit is going to sort of keep his distance. He sees the bird, the fucking trash pigeon, whispering to Porla, like, you know what you have to do. And I look at Porla and I say, you don't have to listen to that. You know that, right? I know it must be hard. It must have so much power over you, but you have your friends to help you too. And I take out my sling, and I'm going to use all of the attacks that I can to try to pin this bird off of her shoulder.
Oh my god, like, just little rocks just at this stupid fucking pigeon.
Yeah, how many attacks per turn do you get?
Alright, so I get two attacks per turn. I can spend a key point. I have two key points left. I can spend one to, like, do focused aim, and then because I did that, I can spend another to do a third attack as a bonus action.
And what does focused aim get you?
It gets me... I can basically use a key point to add to the attack roll.
I'm going to say you can do as many attacks as you would normally be able to do in an action, but no bonus act.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, so I get two attacks per action. So I will roll the first one with advantage using my inspiration.
There we go.
So does a 22 hit?
Oh my god, please.
22 hits.
Okay.
Imagine the AC of a pigeon.
Yes, AC of a pigeon.
But it's a pigeon that's also a fucked up dinosaur god, probably.
Do you want me to roll damage on these?
Let's go, Kith, kill god.
Okay, so that's... That's four bludgeoning, but also because I have Crusher, I can move it 5 feet. So I'm going to just, like, that first ping, 100%, like, pings it 5 feet away from Porla, like, away from her. And I can do my second attack?
Yes.
That's another 22.
Yeah, that went again.
And that is another 4 bludgeoning damage.
Okay, so you sling your sling at the bird, at this pigeon made of yellow light, as all pigeons are at the end of the day. And the first one knocks it away from Porla's shoulder. And the second one hits it again. And you see, as the second one makes contact, you see the light explode out into this like starburst of light and dissipate. You see the it sort of burst out into, you know, however many particles of light, and the light sort of swims through the air and makes its way back to the reliquary around Porla's neck.
Okay.
The power of friendship hits a bird.
Exactly.
You hit one bird with 2 stones. All right, it is now Esther's turn.
Okay. So Esther has also been walking with the gang. My heart's actually beating now.
I sure hope it is beating.
Jesus.
fast. And Porla, so I realized that one of the things that's really tough about leaving any school, even if we hadn't been heroes, is that you then just have to start to spend a lot of time by yourself. So I can understand how you would have come to this decision feeling so alone, and that this was the only choice that you could end up making.
You have the 3 of Pentacles. Your character ends up working with another party member. This is a collaborative one. Ooh. So we can pull someone in, and like, what's the circumstance and how does it go? So who do we want to pull into this?
I love this. I think Esther is like, I need advisors. I need like sages. So I think it would be Kit that he would reach out to and be like, I need, like, you need to come train my mind.
Yeah. All right, let's get Phil in here. Okay, so Phil, to catch you up, Esther is in a situation where he had to kind of take on the family business and be in a leadership role. And so I'll let you guys talk it out, but there was this conversation of like, let's bring in Kit because he's a wise person to like help me figure out my new role.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's, I think maybe Esther hasn't spoken to any of the group in quite a while. I don't know. I think he imagines that not a lot of people are, but he sends a message to Kit in some way, saying, if you are in need of employment, I am in desperate need of a training for mind. I feel that I have been painfully exposed to the places that I am lacking, and I am desperate for the assistance. I could pay you close to whatever you would like if you would come and be my essentially life advisor, my life coach, my mind guru for this year. Well, especially, I think particularly this is like a big transition time. Like,
right.
The matriarch of my family has crumbled, and I inherently am untrustworthy of everyone in the family, and I just need to get all my accounts in order.
I see.
It's sort of like Succession, Game of Thrones, like it's sort of this stuff happening together.
Okay. I got it. Yeah, so I guess Kit definitely gets this message. I think he actually goes back to the monastery where he came from. That's where he might still be at this point. Let's say he's there, gets the message. And yeah, I mean, he travels. And I don't think Kit would accept payment, frankly. Like, he comes from a real communal situation which doesn't really deal with money so much. It's like a farming commune monastery kind of deal. So definitely, I turned that down. I turned down the money, and I, first time seeing you since everything happened, I think I'm used to seeing you being really confident, and like you're a person who likes to act. And so I'm like sort of surprised, right? I think Kit feels taken aback by this, being like, don't you normally know what to do, right? Like, this is kind of surprising to me. What, and I think I just start by getting a gauge on your feelings. So like, what about this feels really overwhelming for you?
I just, this, in the, that last fight,
I just was throwing everything I had at this thing, and every move of instinct of just go and attack were completely ineffective, and I had no other possible move except from this one move. And since then, it's been 2 years of showing how naive and unprepared I was for any situation that wasn't tailored exactly for my abilities. And I just think that I need to be able to develop myself to read more situations, so I'm not setting myself up for one particular game, but learning how to understand the rules of any game.
I see. That makes a lot of sense to me. But before you learn how to read different situations, I think I've learned that it's really important to be able to read yourself first. And I think that's, although it might seem kind of counterintuitive, like you want to feel prepared for everything, I want you to listen to yourself first. And I want you to think really hard about what it is that's scaring you, what it is that makes you feel anxious about all of this. And not really worrying about how you are going to act, but really focusing on what's happening right now. At least that's what my whole tradition is about, and I think I've come to really see the value in that, in not dwelling so much on the past or what's to come.
Right. I also think that, like, if that conversation was like happening at my like apartment or like house or whatever, right when Kit finished talking, my girlfriend like walked in and was like, "Well, here's Esther, here's some like cheese and bread," and just like a full like pampering, and Esther just like sunk so deep into his chair. I was like, "What are the choices that I have made?" Like, just being told to be like, "You must listen to yourself." And then immediately he's like, I found another mom and I'm still not doing anything.
Because this isn't a major arcana that's giving you like this massive personality shift, my inclination would be that like you internalize this, but like it doesn't change things right away. Or like maybe you don't internalize it right away. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of degrees of reflection that need to happen with that for it to actually like have a real effect. Yeah, I think Esther is almost like, "Kit, what the fuck? Just tell me what to do.
Yeah.
I don't need to think about myself. I hate myself. I don't need that anymore." And the thing is, you weren't thinking about all of us and how we could be here for you, and we could figure out ways to process through this, and we could listen, and we could talk. So in reality, and then I would like to use the disguise self spell to transform myself into Chiron.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
And really snaps his fingers, transforms into Chiron, looks at Porla. "You made all the wrong choices."
Yeah. Fuck me. That's cold. What are you gonna, what's your ability check?
Well, my goal is for her to collapse in pain and agony.
Well,
I love
so
it.
I'm trying, I can persuade her to do that, or...
She has to make an opposed survival check against Esther's sick burn.
Okay, I'm going to have... Maybe she'll make a save.
I mean...
She's very wise, but I'm happy for it to be wisdom.
I mean, it makes sense. It's psych damage.
You know, it's psychic. It's psychological warfare. She does have a plus 8. Sorry, I'm trying to homebrew in real time, but it's just like not translating. I think that for the mechanic that I'm working with, I need you to do it and not me. Great. So I need you to do, I kind of want it to be intimidation, because I feel like if you're trying to like hurt someone with your charisma, that's what that is.
Great.
Okay. That's a 17 plus 5.
22.
Another 22.
Nice.
Okay. Porla falls to her knees and looks up at you just like crying tears of rage. She's like, how could you? You don't deserve to even look like her for a second. And you see from her reliquary emerges like a large ostrichy type looking thing. And it kind of grabs her by the shirt and like yanks her up with its beak back to standing and starts kind of like pecking at her.
Can I try to hug her?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, just like full embrace is what I'm trying to do.
All right. As this bird pulls her up to standing, her knees almost give out, and you catch her and you hug her as tight as you can. And at first you feel like she's just kind of limp in your arms, and she starts to hug you back. You feel her arms kind of creep around your shoulders, and you feel her kind of just shaking with these heavy sobs.
I'm just like stroking her hair, and I'm like, it's okay. It's okay. We can make this okay. Help us make this okay.
I told you there's nothing I can do anymore. It doesn't matter if I want to stop it or not. You feel her kind of jerk back from your hug and break away as you realize she's been yanked back by this ostrich made of yellow light. And then you see the ostrich spread its wings, which is a very weird thing for an ostrich to do. And then you see it transform, you see its shape transform in real time. It gets larger and it transforms into a pterodon, like a pterodactyl type dinosaur. And you see it throw its head back and roar into the sky and say,
you're doing this, Porla. You promised me you would do this, and you're doing it whether you like it or not.
And it flies into the back of her neck and possesses her with this yellow light. You see her eyes glow with this sickly yellow light, and you see her throw her arms out and rise to the sky, and her aura has wings, and she soars at this like ridiculous speed. You blink and you miss it.
Oh, so Winsip can't grab her leg as she goes over?
No, it's way higher. And you see her whiz over to the temple, just like shoot over. She lands kind of in the temple over the bowl and then just sort of drops into the bowl, like full body. Turns out it's a very large bowl. And she drops into it, and everything goes still. And that's where we will end today.
Good fucking damn it,
Megan. Oh, Jesus. Oh.
Well, shit.
Could we have actually stopped that from happening? You know? Is there...
It could have... I don't know. I don't know how much I can tell you right now. It's not a simple answer of whether you could have stopped it, but it could have gone very differently.
Yes, there. Okay.
There are many ways it could have gone.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Good session.
Uh-huh. What the fuck?
Oh my god.
I'm gonna need to lie down.